all the kids have kind of gone back to school. And it's kind of interesting as the kids were going back to school, kind of the mixed reactions, you know, when you say to kids, you know, are you excited about going back? You know, and some kids, oh, yeah, I can't wait to go back to school. Can't wait to see my friends again. You know, summer is boring, you know, whatever. And other kids kind of, you know, oh, no, I don't want to go back to school. School's awful. You got to get up so early. You know, they control every moment of your life, you know. And most people are somewhere in between, you know, they want to see their friends again, they, you know, school's not so bad, but, you know, they did kind of like sleeping in, and that'll be a bummer, you know. But it's kind of interesting, all the reactions that we have to the whole back-to-school thing. And it made me kind of think about, as I prepared this lesson, you know, kids get tired of hearing it, but just how much we take school for granted. And how fortunate we are to have back to school, because that's not the standard issue around the world. We get to go back to school, but imagine if there was no school to go back to. If education just wasn't a possibility for you, what would your life be like? What would it be like if you couldn't read? And just think about that for a moment. If you can't read, you know, that teens, no texting, sorry. Yeah, you know, no texting, no Google, you know, no, none of that social media stuff. Also means you can't drive, because you can't read the signs, you can't take your test, no driving if you can't read. You would have only verbal communication. I tutored, years and years ago, I tutored a guy in reading, adult. And he said, you know, he was so excited when he could finally, like, learn to sound out words, that this was a big moment for him when he could sound it out. And he said, now my wife can leave me notes, and I know what she's saying. And I never thought about that. You know, all your communication, if you can't read, is verbal. And if you can't hear it, you're not going to know it. What a difference reading makes. And just think about the other aspects of school, too, you know, the appreciation of the sciences and history and some of those other things. Math, I mean, I know we all love algebra so much, you know, but life without math would have its own challenges. but just imagine life without school and what it would be like to not have an education. Quite different. So tonight we're actually going to look at two different places, and the first one is Madagascar. And in Madagascar, they have a 65% literacy rate. Think about that, 65%, that's it. Everybody else is some form of illiterate. And of course this means that it's not an even 65 across the board. The guys have a slightly higher than 65, the girls are lower than 65. And so with this kind of an illiteracy rate, this means that about 28% of kids under the age of 14 are working. So, you know, think about it, school, you know, maybe isn't your top place of where you'd like to be, but you could be working. And unfortunately, if you're working before you're 14, that means you're working a dead-end job. You're working menial labor, you're working some kind of just stuck job. Because you don't have the education to advance and to get ahead in your job. So it's very different if you cannot read. In Madagascar, we have a district center, a Nazarene district center, and it used to have all these rooms that just sat vacant. You know, they built it, they were using it, and then, you know, things changed, and so they had this space. And missionaries came in, and they looked at this space that was available, and they said, "We need to do something with this. We need to make use of this." And it's missionaries Ronald and Shelley Miller, and they looked around and they thought, "Let's build a learning center. Let's try to educate people." And so they built this learning center, and they named it Living Hope School, kind of a neat name. And they're focusing on learning English, studying the Bible, and gaining computer skills, because when they looked around, they said, these are the top needs in our area, English and computer literacy and Bible learning. And they thought, we're going to start with this and see what happens. And they also thought if they charged just a menial fee, it would kind of help to support the district, and that way you could weed out kind of the serious students from the not-so-serious students. So they charge somewhere around the equivalent of $5 to $10 our money a month to come to this school, kind of your fee to attend there. So it's not much, $5 to $10, you know, a month in our economy. But it's enough that you have to be dedicated. You have to seriously want to do this. And that they're looking at equipping people with job skills so that people who are stuck and they can't get out of these menial jobs will now have the ability to move up and to move on and get better skills. They were kind of hoping when they opened this, they set their goals, and they thought, you know, if we can start out with 5 students in this new school that we're opening, that'll be great. And it didn't work that way. They started out with 18 students. So God sent above and beyond, as he always does, what they're expecting. And their students range in ages from 15 to 40 years old. So it's not just, you know, like our idea of a school for kids. This is a school for anybody who wants to learn. Anyone who's dedicated in improving themselves can come and learn at the Living Hope School. Another vision that they have, I'm sorry, I just jumped. It's a quote here from Shelley. She says, "Here in Madagascar, education in general is very, very low. There are not enough schools in the country to accommodate all the children. So there are a lot of kids who never get to finish high school." Imagine that. You know, we have, you know, sometimes we complain about large class sizes or whatever, but there they just plain don't have enough classrooms to accommodate the kids. And so if you start falling behind, it's too bad. You're out. And so the Living Hope School is a place where there's room. There's classroom space for you. You can come. You can learn. You can better yourself. And it's open to anyone, regardless of age, regardless of what schooling you have or don't have. You know, they'll take you and they'll start where you're at and move on from that point. Eventually, they would like to get the school accredited and expand the class offerings. Currently, they have 5 teachers, and like I said, they teach Bible, English, and computer basics. And so they would like to get a bigger staff and a wider range of classes and then eventually become an accredited school. And obviously, if there's not enough schools, this is a huge need that they would be filling. A lot of people came together to make this happen. You know, you don't just snap your fingers and poof, look, there's a school. You know, empty classrooms don't just transform into, you know, these fruitful rooms bubbling over with activity. It takes a lot of work and a lot of effort from a lot of people. And that's the case here. The whole thing started in 2014. And during 2014 and 15, some work and witness teams came. A lot of the local people chipped in and helped out. A lot of our Nazarene staff that were there in Madagascar came and worked at this. And everybody pooled together to make this a reality. They also had a group of people that donated 20 computers. And that was just such a huge blessing. That they could, you know, now they can offer these computer classes because they've got the computers. 20 computers showed up for them to use. Because of all the volunteer work, because of all the donations, because of the work and witness teams coming, because of everybody just pooling together, this school cost less than $500 to get going. And that I just thought was so exciting. I thought, What a great investment of not quite $500 into these people's lives to help them spiritually and economically, just in so many ways. What a wonderful investment. You know, imagine if every time you invested $500, you got this kind of a return. That would be wonderful. What a great investment. What a great outreach to the people in Madagascar. In Madagascar, again, because of the situation in the poor schooling and so on and so forth, we have a center there that provides 420 children under the age of 18 with meals and education and support. We have it's a Compassionate Ministries outreach organization program, and we care for 420 kids there. And so they're kind of looking that this Living Hope School will be an extension of that Compassionate Ministries program, that these kids can go to Living Hope and after they graduate from the Compassionate Ministries, it'll sort of be like a college experience. You know, they can take the basics that they get at the Compassionate Ministries Center and then go to Living Hope and take those computer classes or take additional classes and really get ahead and really do something with their lives. And it's an exciting, you know, way of pooling our resources and pooling our ministries and having everything work together to really create something great. And so they have a lot of long-term goals and a lot of excitement with this. And also, as if that wasn't already enough, there's a lot of pastors who are looking at this and saying, I can get computer training. I can learn, you know, how to do all this computer stuff. I can research. I can learn. I can get more theology training. When you learn to use a computer, it opens up so many doors. And especially if you don't have access to books or libraries, or again, the things that we take for granted, if you can get online and get this stuff, there's so many resources available to these pastors, but they just didn't know how to get it. You know, it was there, but they couldn't use it. And now with the school providing the basic computer training, these pastors will have access to the whole world of knowledge out there. So this is just a really exciting organization and school that's been opened up, and great things are happening in Madagascar because of this. Our second story actually is in Hawaii, and you know, we don't think about Hawaii. You know, it's not like it's a distant country, but yet it's part of our own. So it's sort of an interesting mix there. But in Hawaii, they've got some real educational issues too. And you would think, you know, well, being part of the United States, you know, how bad can it be? But it is. They have some real challenges there. And they have a story here about a girl named Lily. And she's in the sixth grade. And she's living, as of 2015. As of 2015, she had lived for 2 years in a place called Hope for a New Beginning. And this is a transitional shelter-type place that she's been living at because she was more or less homeless. And this is a place that people like her can go to. Homelessness is a big problem in Hawaii. Part of the issue is that, you know, with the climate there, it isn't so bad to be homeless. It's not like, you know, in New York City or something. And so they have a lot of people who are homeless for at least a portion of the year. A very large percentage of the population is just sort of transient, and they sort of come and go. But Lily's story, in 2014, her mother died. And when her mother died, and her father had already died, and so her mother left her with a 19-year-old sister. But the sister already had three boys of her own, and she really didn't want this extra sister. So for a while, Lily stayed with her sister and stayed in school, but most of her time she spent caring for her nephews. And so she was, you know, the live-in babysitter and you know, kind of tried to go to school, but not really. And then it just wasn't working really well, and she ended up in this transitional shelter. And so members of the Nazarene Church started visiting this shelter, and they started ministering to the residents there, and in particular, they started working with the children, and they provided tutoring. Every week, approximately 10 to 15 volunteers show up at the shelter and spend time with the kids, and they tutor them, and they just hang out with them. You know, sometimes the tutoring is great, but it's just the, hey, how are you? You know, that let's talk thing that makes the biggest difference. And so they would come and they would tutor and they would hang out and they would find out, you know, what's going on in your life? What can we do for you? Education is a priority because the staff there realizes that if you can educate these kids, it'll break this cycle of poverty. But what happens is that these kids, they go to school and they don't get the tutoring, they don't get the help, and then they start falling behind. And you know how it is, especially in some classes, you know, you fall behind a little bit, well, then that means you fall behind some more, and the more you fall behind, you're stuck and you can't get caught up, and then pretty soon you're dropping out. And that's what happened. Usually by middle school, a lot of these kids would drop out because they just couldn't keep up, and they would just drop out of school. And their parents, when they have parents, their parents are really, education is important to them. They want to help their children. It's not like some of these kids just come from horrible families or anything. Some of them come from good families, but the parents, they a lot of times don't speak English, or they're not well-educated themselves, and so they can't help their kids with their homework, and they can't tutor their own kids, and they can't even go into the school and try to get help because they don't speak the language, and so the parents are just trapped, and they want to do something, but they can't, and they don't know what to do, and they don't know where to turn. It's very frustrating for them, and so now here's this organization that will be advocates for these kids, that will tutor them, that will help them, and get them that education, get these kids caught up, keep them in school past middle school, and get them out of the cycle of poverty. They can equip these kids with so much. And because of this problem with the parents not speaking English, the school kind of realized, you know, okay, here's something we need to address. And so in the future, they'd like to start offering English as a second language classes for the parents so that they're not just ministering to the kids, but they're also ministering to the parents as well and helping them. And in addition to all of that, as if that wasn't enough, I love these things because they never say, okay, you know, we've reached our goal, we're done. You know, they're always looking on. What else can we do? Where else can we go? So in addition to all of that, they hold huge district events. They have literacy fairs. They have hygiene drives or clothing drives. Sometimes they have just movie night out and just kind of for fun. They just, any kind of activity they can come up with to bring these people together and show them the love of Jesus, they're all for it. And so they have these huge events, sometimes with as many as 60 people helping out. I was just thinking about our church's community day and how many people we had helping out and just showing the love of Jesus. Kind of exciting. And then they encourage the local churches. This is a district thing, but in every church in the district is encouraged to reach out into their community as well. So it's not just, you know, we'll let them do it. You know, it's everybody get involved. And because this is Hawaii, you know, it's spread out over the islands and different areas kind of look different and different places have different needs. And so the goal is to start what they call contextually appropriate ministries to their communities. It just means look out your door and see what needs to be done and go do it. Contextually appropriate. Just find a problem and solve it. But I like that. So anyway, back to Lily. Lily got the tutoring she needed, and a bunch of the women just came behind Lily and supported her and loved her and invested in her and invited her to church and sometimes picked her up and took her to church, took her out to the movies, took her for supper, you know, invited her to their homes, and just spent time with her. And when she was in church, she heard about Jesus, and she heard how much Jesus loves her. And she was just amazed by this. And she invited Jesus into her heart. And, you know, she's getting educated. She's learning to read. She's learning about Jesus. And she's excited about all of this. And so she went to the youth pastor. And she said, you know, I want to know more about Jesus. Where can I learn more about Jesus? Is there a book or something that I can read with stories in it about Jesus? And the youth pastor was floored that here's this girl that had no idea what a Bible was or what was in it or anything like that or that there you know was resources about Jesus. And so he, of course, immediately gave her a Bible, showed her where to read it, you know, kind of educated her on where to go in that wonderful book, and took care of her. But because of this tutoring program, because of these people reaching out, trying to form these relationships with these kids, and most of them are volunteers. This isn't, you know, they're not a paid staff that's doing this. This is a lot of volunteers. Lives are being changed. Lily is one example, but there's many, 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 many more Lily stories out there, and they're making a difference, and they're changing lives, and they're doing things in their community. When I was kind of doing this, there were two parts of the story that really jumped out at me. The first part was the idea that education will help break the cycle of poverty. And we all know that's true. If we can educate and people can get better jobs, they can learn more about hygiene, they can be healthier, they can be stronger. It just education breaks that cycle of poverty. We know that. But I was thinking about us here. And here, we don't have a lot of material poverty in our culture right now, especially us, like, really local here. So what do we do with this statement of education breaks the cycle of poverty? And one thing that I sort of thought about was we might not have a lot of material poverty right here, but we certainly have a lot of moral and spiritual poverty. The two kind of go hand in hand. And you don't have to look far to realize that in our country and in our area, spirituality is in poverty level. There's just not an abundance of it. You know, you go into the schools. Well, why is there violence in the schools? Well, because we don't have the moral basis, you know, these moral foundations that we used to have. And I just sort of thought that, you know, maybe as the church, we should be reaching out and addressing this problem. How can we reach out and break this cycle of spiritual poverty? How can we reach out and show people, you know, who Jesus is and what is right and what's wrong? Because the world is twisting it all up. The world is saying that right is wrong and wrong is right. And you know, whatever you feel like is fine and you just go do whatever you want. And then we wonder when things go totally amok, you know, what happened? Well, that's what happens. And so how can we tutor moral subjects? And I think it goes back, just like with Lily's story, it takes people investing time in other people, people pulling people aside and saying, let's go to the movies, let's go out for lunch, let's, you know, whatever, come to my house for dinner. How can I be a positive influence in your life? And I think it's neat with our church. We're already doing this in so many ways. This church thrills me. You guys do such an amazing job. And I was thinking about the caravan program and the van program, you know, and we bring these kids in and we just love them, you know, and we show them these morals. We show them about Jesus. We show them this other way of living that they're not going to see in school and they're not going to see at home. We have the after-school program with the teens, you know, and we've got all these teens running around amok over there and having a great time and, you know, trying to reach these teens. But just like in these programs, I said, you know, they never say, okay, we're done. They never say we've reached our goal, we've done enough. And so I think with our church, it's the same thing. We can never say, well, we have so many kids involved in caravan, we're good. That's enough. We should never reach that point where we say, that's enough. We're doing all that we really want to do right now, and we're done. We should never reach that point. And it should always be a matter of, what else can we do? There's more kids out there. How can we reach them? What can we do to bring them in? The other thing that kind of struck me, and it goes hand in hand with this, is this contextually appropriate ministries. Because obviously what works for one church isn't going to work for somewhere else, and you know, it's always changing depending upon where you are. But the idea is you look out and you say, okay, how can we reach the people that we have right here? How can we get more people into God's fold? How can we reach more people with the love of Jesus? And I kind of think about this a lot because I think the church is sort of changing. And it's probably always been changing because the world changes. And so, you know, the things that we did 50 years ago to bring people into the church just aren't as effective anymore. And so when you just keep doing what you've always done, maybe that's not really what you need to be doing anymore. If it's not effective, if it's still working, then by all means, keep going. But, you know, if you look at something and you say, you know, we've been doing this for the past 20 years, but we really haven't seen anything happening here, then maybe it's time to make some changes. And that's scary. And it's hard. You know, I look around and I think, What does our community need? I don't know. You know, what can we do to reach out? What can we offer that's needed? Because sometimes, too, what happens is a church says, you know, we're going to start this new plan, and God, please bless it. But maybe what God wants is a completely different plan. You know, maybe he's got completely different ideas. And when we just say, nope, this is what we're going to do, Lord, we're expecting you to do something here. We're coming at it the wrong way. So we need to start thinking about how can we reach our neighbors? What are their needs? What's the most effective way to show the love of Jesus to the people around us? What might work? What won't work? You know, and maybe we might try something and we think, you know, hey, yeah, this will be it, and it's not. It's a matter of finding something else. But how can we best meet those needs? And we all know that we have limited resources. We have limited finances. We have limited people hours. You know, there's so many people doing so much. We need to be cognizant of our resources and the best use of those things. And so how can we as a church be the best stewards of what God has given us? God has blessed us so much, and we need to use it in the most effective way possibly. How can we, as a church, as an individual, make the biggest difference in the lives around us? How can we love our neighbor the way the scriptures tell us that we're supposed to love our neighbor? How can we break that cycle of poverty? And I really wish I had an answer for all of these questions, and I don't. But I think it's something that we need to think about. You know, when we go into prayer and when we think about our church and our programs and where we want to spend our time and how we want to be stewards of what God has given us, what is the best use of these resources? What is the best use of my life that I can give to the people around me? And of course, you know, if you've got any great answers to any of those questions, you know, talk to the pastor. He's glaring at me. But how can we as a church reach out? You know, fresh ideas might be good. How can we reach out to our community around us? How can we effectively reach those that are our neighbors? How can we show them God's love? How can we bring them into the fold of God's care? And how can we make a difference? These are questions that are being asked all around the world, in the mission fields and right here. And we can study what's going on all around the world and say, yay, good for them. And it's neat to hear their ideas, and it's exciting to hear their stories. But we also have to turn that right back on us and say, what can we do here? If somebody was to write a missions lesson on Mifflinburg Church of the Nazarene, what would they write? What would be our story? How are we reaching out? How are we a part of God's plan? And like I said, our church is an exciting and active part of God's plan. There is no denying that. But we should never say we're doing enough. What else can we do? What bigger piece of the pie can we cut for ourselves in God's plan? How many people can we reach? We should never say we're done. So I hope that you'll think about that. Pray about that. Where is God calling you? Which neighbor are you supposed to reach out to? However that looks in your life, what can you do in God's kingdom? So let's have a word of prayer, and then we can all go swimming. So, Heavenly Father, I praise you tonight. It's so exciting to see your hand at work around the world and right here in this church. God, it's exciting to see your power, to see your miracles. God, you are such a huge God, and we can never begin to grasp your power and your awesomeness, but when we get a tiny glimmer of it, and we see a tiny picture of what's going on in your world, it's exciting, and we enjoy it, Lord. And I just thank you that we can meet together, that we can look at these stories, that we can learn about what your plan is and our part in it. God, I ask that you would challenge each one here. Help us to find out where you're calling us to. God, give us the courage, give us the wisdom, give us the strength, give us the time. Help us to prioritize. God, whatever our lives need, that we can be in the center of your will, help us to get there. Just show us, Lord. Let your spirit speak to us and help us to do the absolute most that we can. God, may we never sit back and say, it's time for somebody else. May we never make excuses. God, help us to be bold in our outreach. God, give us a good time tonight and a time of fellowship and safety. And Lord, may we meet back here again that we can praise your name over and over. I ask these things in your name. Amen.